the word that's in my mind is upheaval. Anytime there's upheaval,
yeah,
there's an opportunity there. There's always an opportunity. There's also a massive challenge. And so what we're talking about today is, okay, in the upheaval, how do you navigate the difficult part? How do you hold it? How do you walk through life and wake up in the morning and continue to show up in your best self? So yes, there's opportunity, but only for the people that see it and only for the people that actually engage and lean in to start taking advantage of whatever opportunities come.
Welcome to the Real Better Life podcast, where people that are writing stories worth telling share their knowledge, wisdom, and perspective to help you go further, faster as you move to your better life. Over to your hosts, Dave Ness and Rob Elkema.
Hey, everybody. Dave Ness and
Rob Elkema
here.
Happy Monday.
Yeah, for another episode of the Real Better Life podcast. This might be new territory because it's like 8:20 in the morning.
I think we did one other one.
Did we?
We did one other coffee podcast.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
This is only the second.
Do you have bourbon in that coffee?
No, I probably should. If you're wondering why I sound a little hoarse today, I'm fighting off the crud from my kids.
I was going to say you have three kids.
Like, so everybody's kids have the crud right now.
Totally.
And then also we went to the Avalanche game yesterday.
Oh, nice.
And they came back from 4-0 and won 5-4.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I was screaming like a lunatic. Got beer dumped on me.
As usual.
It was a great Sunday.
That's awesome. That is a good Sunday. Well, today, I think what we want to dive into is navigating crisis or crises. Is that a word? Crises?
It is now. I like it.
Navigating emergencies or crisis in your life. And obviously, for the listeners, the NAR lawsuit is the most recent brand. It's the most recent flavor of a crisis that we're all pretty familiar with, right? And some of you might be rolling your eyes going, it's not a crisis. Okay, that's okay. We're not here to define what the NAR lawsuit is or isn't. Yeah. What we're talking about is adversity, challenge, heightened sense of angst, which oftentimes comes with an emergency, or the way that we're talking about it today is crisis. And so you could think back, I'm sure, to lots of different examples of this. The most recent one probably in the last half decade is COVID. And no matter how you handled that, no matter how you held that, no matter what you thought about it, it was indeed an emergency or a crisis that we had to tackle, particularly in our industry of real estate. So crises or emergencies can come in a lot of different flavors. They could be health, like COVID. They could be legal, like the NAR lawsuit. They could be political. Who knows, in the future, there might be another crisis that's caused politically. That could be financial. They could be personal. They could be health. They could be emotional. They could be spiritual. There could be a lot of different ways of experiencing what we'd call crisis. And so what we wanted to do was maybe unpack a roadmap, having a roadmap. The concept is having a roadmap or something that you turn to say, hey, when this kind of stuff arises in my life, and it always will, here's a familiar way that I can navigate through and show up still in my best self in your career, for your family, for your friends, for your clients. Something that you can rest on is really the topic of today.
And it's funny how, as you were talking, it struck me. I'm like, we've had a lot of conversations, you know, recently on the podcast about this whole concept of a roadmap for fill in the blank.
You're right.
Right. And
maybe this should be the roadmap podcast.
Right. Which I think that's in, you know, both of our natures is to have to take things and figure out how can we create a system around this.
Totally.
Right.
And, repeatable.
How can we navigate this, you know, and take lessons from the past and apply them to the present in the future, you know, in a systematic way. And I guess before we dive into this, another thing to remind anyone who's listening of is whether you're listening to this, you know, in real time where this, you know, the NAR settlement got rolled out probably 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
Coming out of COVID, which just happened, you know, roughly 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I also think about times like when you got into residential real estate, you know, and you pivoted out of the development world. Mm-hmm. It's ironic how many people I've talked to that have these massively successful real estate careers, but they started right after the 2008 housing crash.
Oh, yeah.
And the housing bubble burst. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's funny when you talk to those people and you're like, why would you get started then? And they're like, I don't know. I just didn't know any better, I guess. And it's funny because I think they became such good agents or such good brokers because
Yeah.
They stepped in during a time where there was a lot of unknown and a lot of adversity, and they were just the kind of person who is okay figuring out how to navigate that.
Yeah.
Right. And it created a lot of mental toughness. It created a lot of pride, a lot of resilience, you know? And so I think, you know, not that you want to make light of this, but I think when things like this come along, I think of all the people that are in the process of getting started or just got their career started at Thrive and at other brokerages. And I think like, man, I'm really happy for you in kind of a sick way, because ultimately I think this is going to make you a better version of you. Ultimately, I think this is going to make your story that much better when you're like, yeah, and I got started 6 months before the NAR lawsuit happened or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, totally.
I feel like there's going to be a ton of those stories, because the fact of the matter is, no matter what shakes out, and there's still a lot of unknowns and there's a lot of conjecture floating around out there, one thing is certain, people are still going to buy and sell homes.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? And so some people are going to find opportunities in that. You know, some people are going to dip and figure out something else to go do.
Yeah. And that's okay.
And that's totally okay.
Yep. Yeah, I love it. The word that's in my mind is upheaval. Anytime there's upheaval,
yeah,
there's an opportunity there. There's always an opportunity. There's also a massive challenge. And so what we're talking about today is, okay, in the upheaval, how do you navigate the difficult part? How do you hold it? How do you walk through life and wake up in the morning and continue to show up in your best self? So yes, there's opportunity, but only for the people that see it and only for the people that actually engage and lean in to start taking advantage of whatever opportunities come. And the funny thing is, we don't even know what the opportunities are yet.
We don't.
All the headlines are all about how it's the demise of real estate and we don't need brokers anymore and real estate agents are going away and the world has never been the same. By the way, I don't know if this, I'm just going to get on my soapbox real quick if I can. So during COVID, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but during COVID, the word unprecedented was used in an unprecedented number of cases. It was ridiculous. You should Google it. When you get done listening to this podcast, you should Google how many times was the word unprecedented used throughout the COVID years. And it has like a chart and it's hilarious. You know what the term is now?
What?
Bombshell.
Oh, great.
The bombshell case, the bombshell NAR lawsuit, the bombshell settlement, shut up. We don't want any more bombshells going off.
I don't even know what to think right now.
It's so bad. So now there's an unprecedented bombshell or a bombshell that was unprecedented, because when you have an unprecedented bombshell, it's a bombshell that goes off and it's unprecedented. So there you go.
God. Anyway. By the way, can I go back to something? Because you know the history of this better than I do, right? Like I'm a lot newer to the real estate game than you are.
Yeah.
I was talking with one of the guys that we work with, and I was like, I don't buy the narrative that agents are going away or just that buyer's agents are going away specifically.
No.
Because this is wise. Over the last decade, can you just start, you probably can't even get through the whole list. Can you start listing off some of these flat fee models that were designed to replace agents in a real estate transaction,
yeah, 100%.
Right? And how many of those either people have never heard of or are out of business or got sold and folded into a more traditional brokerage model? Like, what are some of the ones you think of right off the top of your head?
All of them. it is interesting. And this is a little bit of a sidestep to our content today, but still connected, because this whole idea that, you know, now we don't need buyer's agents anymore is ridiculous. And we'll get into some of the stats later in the podcast, but it is connected to the idea that you're talking about, which is this is not the first time that downward pressure or potential replacement of buyer agent commission has been before us, right? And so in our marketplace, I don't know listeners across the US, but in our marketplace, we've had so many different renditions of companies coming in to do flat fee, $500, $1,000, 1%. On the listing side, and then, hey, we only pay the buyer's agent $500, $200. We don't pay him at all. We pay him $1,000. We pay him 1%, whatever. Like over and over and over and over again. And so you're probably thinking of one that's still in existence here is Trelora, right? Trelora. So it's the word realtor scrambled. So that's one. Second one is Redefi, which blew up rapidly. I think it went across like 9 states. And then Purple Bricks from Europe, they were ready to just completely changed the real estate landscape of the United States. And a lot of investors lost a lot of money. And then Redfin, that's probably the most popular one. And then a whole bunch of other ones that are just kind of mom and pops and little outfits here and there. But they also come to one of three outcomes, like 100%. There's no exception to this. One, they transition into a traditional model, right? Two, they M&A, they merge and get acquired by a traditional model.
Right.
Or three, they shutter.
Yeah.
They just close up doors and go bye-bye.
Yep.
And so one of those three outcomes has been applied to all four of the examples that I just said, as well as all the other ones.
Yeah.
And so there's just a sense of like, hey, this isn't the first time that someone has wanted to innovate the real estate, and particularly the buy side of real estate. This one's legal, so it's not an innovation, but it is a legal innovation,
right?
Essentially.
Yep.
But it's not new.
Right.
I think is your point. It's not the first time.
Well, and the reason I bring that up is because I think there's been a consistent response in the marketplace that says, regardless of all this innovation, regardless of trying to automate a buyer's agent,
yep,
people are going, no, I don't want to automate that. I want somebody in my corner. I want a personal relationship. I want somebody who's an expert to help me navigate my transaction.
Yes.
Right. And so I don't know how all of this is going to shake out, but I think that gives me a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
When I think about just what the marketplace is telling us.
Yeah, 100%.
You know,
yeah,
for a decade.
And we'll get into some of the actual stats that I think will be helpful as we kind of navigate our, you know, how to tackle adversity here, which hopefully will be arming for listeners as well.
So as we go back to this concept of the roadmap.
Yeah.
We had 5 points
yep.
that you had written down. Do you want to start with those or do you want to go somewhere else first?
Yeah, let's do that. So I'll just name the five and then we can unpack, you know, each one, spend a little bit of time on it, on mm-hmm. each of them. So guys, this is not prescriptive. If one or two of these make sense to you and you go, ah, I want to start doing that, great. And if none of them make sense to you and you don't want to do any of them, great. If you want to do all of them and steal it, fantastic. If you want to augment it, do that. But here are the five. So I think when we're approaching adversity or crisis, first, I think we have to sit with the darkness. I know that sounds kind of heavy for a podcast, but I think we have to sit with the darkness. I think we have to sit with the pain of the unknown and kind of walk through the worst case scenario. So we'll come back to that, but you got to sit with the darkness. Number two, I think you have to increase challenge in your life, which sounds counterintuitive because if it's a crisis or an emergency or an adversity, there already is challenge. But I think we have to amp the challenge in our lives volitionally when we're in a challenging environment. And we'll talk more about that. Number three, don't travel alone. It kind of self-explanatory, but you don't have to go alone. And I think that there's all sorts of examples. And I think we're designed as humans to not have to tackle adversity alone. So we'll talk about that. And then you got to expand your knowledge. Adversity and crisis is a fantastic time to expand your knowledge and to get clear. That's probably the biggest thing, to get clear on what the crisis is and what it isn't. So we'll talk about that. And then the fifth one, the final one is you got to feed your psyche. Have to. I know it sounds trite, like, oh yeah, you know, yeah, positive affirmations or read good books or whatever, but that's unbelievably critical. And we actually did a blog about that as well. So we could potentially link that. But those are the five. Those are the five. So sit with the darkness, increase challenge, don't go alone, expand your knowledge, and feed your psyche. So where do we want to dive in?
I say we go with the first one.
Okay.
First.
Yeah.
Right. And what does it look like to sit with the darkness? What does it look like to, you know, what's the value? This is a better way of asking it. What's the value of naming or determining worst case scenario?
Yeah. Great question. I think the best answer to that is to think about if you don't. If you skip this step, if you just go right into, all right, how are we going to solve this? Or what do we do? Or what's the roadmap? Or what are the practical next steps? And you just skip over the weight of it. The weight of the challenge will end up having a hand on your steering wheel. Even if you think you're in the driver's seat, you're not. Or maybe you are, but there's a hand reaching across that is still in control. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so sitting with the darkness, naming the worst case scenario, picture it, think about it, say it, write it down. Sitting with it and getting your arms around what it could potentially look like, the absolute worst case scenario, kind of harnesses fear. Otherwise, fear runs wild in your mind, your body, your heart, your soul, and it just becomes unfettered, becomes uncontrollable. And it'll creep up in ways that you probably wouldn't even anticipate or expect. So spending some time constructing the worst case scenario, it helps define, quantify, and evaluate what you're actually dealing with. And sitting with it for a time is critical. This keeps you in control of the fear. It's not that the fear is not there. We remind our kids of this all the time, that without fear, there is no bravery. think about that for a second. Without fear, there is no bravery, meaning you don't have to be brave if you're not fearful. And so for anyone to sit and say, well, I'm just not a fearful person. I just get after it. I just get done. You know, I get ready to solve it and I just go forward. That's great. The gusto and the kind of the chest beating is fantastic. However, sitting with it and going, let me really define what the worst case scenario is here so that I know what I'm dealing with and so that I can just sit for a second and go, yeah, if that happened, that would be really bad. Mm-hmm. And that would cause all sorts of upheaval in my life. And I really don't want that. I really want to navigate that well. And sitting with the weight of that is critical so that you're in control. Because otherwise your fear is just kind of lurking around the next corner and you don't really have control of it because you don't really know what you're dealing with and you haven't named the worst case scenario yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I wrote down a couple of things while you were going through that. You know, this old adage, a problem named is a problem solved.
Yes.
Right? If you can actually name it and identify it, then you can get to work doing something about it.
100%.
Right? But when it's just kind of lingering in the back of your head, kind of looming, right?
Yep.
And I guess the looming image is what creates the darkness, the shadow of this unknown thing lurking in the background, right? As soon as you name it, it starts to lose some of its power.
Totally.
Right? And then you can actually confront reality and figure out a game plan.
Yeah.
From there. One other thing too is when you look at that one, once you name it and you get to work creating a solution, it's you know, it's ironic that maybe all four of the other five things, but for sure three of them, increase challenge, expand your knowledge, and feed your psyche. Mm. Those are all individual decisions to get into action, right? And I'm reminded of something we learned a long time ago, which is action cures fear, right? Anytime you feel that fear, it's okay to have that fear. You know, and we learned this when we were knocking on doors. And if you've ever knocked on doors, you can probably remember the very first one very vividly. I do. I don't know if you do, but...
I remember every single one.
That's a lot of doors.
A lot of trauma.
But you do realize, like, as soon as you attack it and you just go do it, you get done with it. And regardless of the outcome, you're like, oh, that wasn't that bad.
It wasn't as bad as I thought.
It's never as bad as you think. And then the more you do it, the more comfortable it gets. And the more comfortable it gets, that fear starts to subside and dissipate.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you wake up one day, which is, I'm sure, why people who have been in the industry for a while, people that have been in business for a while, people that have been alive for a while, I would imagine this probably freaks them out less if they've actually leaned in and taken action in the past, because that action has cured fear and they've realized, like, I've navigated this, I've navigated that, and they start listing those things off.
Yeah.
It's like, well, if I can get through those things, I can get through this.
Yeah. It's awesome. You get like an adversity resume.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's all the shit that I've been through and here's what actually happened. And I'm sure that it wasn't pretty, you know, every single time, but having that kind of resume is huge. Your own emotional resume to be able to say, okay, you know, I can definitely navigate. And one thing that I think is important here is if you're a listener and you're thinking, okay, so how do I actually do that? Well, if you have a team, if you're a team leader or you're a broker or a company owner, doing this verbally with your team is a good thing. Like actually sitting and whiteboarding, let's talk about what the worst case scenario is. I know we all stand up as leaders and we try to, you know, be positive and be motivating and be light for our people and get them pumped up. And that's great. But having a whiteboard session, a very honest, kind of vulnerable whiteboard session to say, this really is the worst case scenario. Let's all talk about it. Let's all add stuff to the whiteboard about what it could potentially mean, what it could look like. Let's just get it out because we're all thinking it. We're all carrying it. So let's just get it out. And then if you're an individual performer, if you're a part of a team, doing it on a piece of paper, like in a notebook, is really good. And just write it down, like, what is the worst case scenario? Maybe you get to a really dark place and you go, man, one of the worst case scenarios is I can't do real estate the way that I had originally planned. It's not going to work. Like maybe that's in your head. Write it down. Make it real. Bring it into to the universe. Keeping it in the closet or shoving it under the rug or sweeping it away is not helping anybody.
And then I think this is a good segue into the next one. Mm-hmm. But I think the theme with all of these things is going to be control the controllables.
Yeah.
Right. So going back to the, you know, knocking on doors analogy, you do realize that you can't really control who's behind that door. You can't control how they treat you. Nope. You can't control whether they buy or not. The thing you can control is just the simple act of knocking on the door. Mm-hmm. You know, the simple act of delivering your script and in your downtime studying your script, yep. right? And there's so many things in the day that you can't control. And I think there's just something very comforting in looking at, there's all this stuff that I can't control. Yeah. I can't predict. I don't know how it's going to work out. And you know what? That's okay. I'm going to focus on the things that I can control. And all five of these things are things that any one of us can absolutely control.
Yeah. Right?
And it gives you some sense of sanity.
Yes.
In the midst of chaos.
Yes.
Of like, I do have some control over certain things, and those are the things I'm going to focus on.
Yeah. It's that sense of familiarity or sanity, like mm-hmm. you said, within the chaos, mm-hmm. within the adversity, within the crisis. That's so important because by nature, the crisis is unfamiliar. Otherwise, it's not a crisis. right? So the very definition of crisis is like, this has never happened before. Well, that's what we're talking about. And so in the midst of that, in that kind of environment, what's something familiar that you can lean on and that you know is predictable and that is controllable and you can actually yeah. execute it no matter what the circumstances?
Yeah. Let me hit one other thing before we go into this because it just hit me. You know, it's yeah. funny. Before we jumped on here, we were having a conversation about success,
uh-huh.
right? And what does success look like?
Yeah.
Right? Which is a great conversation for a different day. But what's interesting is I think of our good friend, Brian Ross.
Yeah.
And how many times I've heard him say, happiness is when expectations meet reality.
Yeah.
Right. And frustration is when expectations and reality don't line up. And it's funny because we're sitting here talking about this and whether it's NAR or COVID or housing crisis or pick whatever.
Fill in the blank.
Right. Crisis in your personal life. You probably had an expectation of like, this is how my real estate career was supposed to look. This is how my life was supposed to look. This is how 2024 was supposed to look.
Right. This is what I had roadmapped.
And then these things happen that reality doesn't line up with your expectations. And the reality is you might need to change your expectations
yes.
to actually feel that sense of happiness and settledness and
yep.
peace and calm in the midst of, you know, still a very chaotic situation. But mm-hmm. if you keep clinging to these old expectations of like, no, it was supposed to be this way.
Yeah, right.
You're going to be really disappointed.
Yeah.
And you're going to be really frustrated.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think the people that probably, you know, this news hits the hardest are people who were using transactions or income to define what a successful year looked like for yeah. them.
Yep.
Right. Because now, well, this is very disruptive
yeah.
to that. So if you can sit down and spend time with like, yeah, how am I actually defining my success? My guess is there are probably some parts of success like learning and growth or becoming a better version of yourself. Characteristics we're talking about like resiliency.
Yeah.
Right? Or you can still be generous.
Yep.
In the face of all this chaos. If generosity is a big part of your definition of success, which I think it should be.
Yeah.
If you're defining what success looks like for you in a healthy way, you can still find ways to resolve your expectation of what success looks like and reality. But if you've gotten a little tilted in terms of like my success is determined by my results.
Yeah.
I think you're setting yourself up for more stress and more angst than probably what you need to be dealing with.
Totally. Right? Yeah. And probably a missed opportunity too. Because for example, if your definition or one of your definitions, one component of success this year was, I really want to become a person who knows how to navigate adversity well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this year is your blessing.
Right.
Like, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
We're joking about it, but if that was part of your business plan, like I want to become the type of person that knows how to navigate adversity well. When this kind of stuff comes up, that's an anchor. It's right. like, oh, the world has given me my gift. Like, yes. Here we go, right? Yes. Versus if I only successful if I close 20 deals.
Right.
Well, maybe you do, maybe you don't, but that's not, yeah, there's some components there that would be missing.
Totally.
Yeah.
So we could go on and on about that, but I want to make that distinction of maybe an extra step to add in here is to revisit what you're doing to define success.
Yeah. For yourself. I love it. That's so good.
Okay. So number two is increasing challenge, which is a very control to controllable. I go back to you. I like this word. I wrote it down and underlined it. Your adversity resume.
Yeah.
Right. Your confidence anchors.
Yes.
Right. And surprise, surprise. I think, you know, when you talk in this, like I'm sitting here looking at it, you talked about increasing challenge specifically in your physical life. And during COVID, you know, you started running more.
Yes.
Right. And what I wrote down was, remember how tough you are.
Yeah.
Like there's something to be said for when you increase challenge, specifically physical challenge, A, there's a lot of chemical benefits to that, you know, the endorphin release and all that stuff.
100%.
But there's a lot of mental benefits to reminding yourself, oh yeah, I can do hard things.
Yes.
And if I can do this hard thing today, then I can probably handle whatever else life is going to throw at me the rest of the day.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. It's like the counterintuitive part is, of course, when we're in a challenging environment. And again, right now, maybe that's an NAR lawsuit. Maybe that's something in your personal life, something in your marriage, something with you being a parent, whatever it is. We tend to naturally, if we're not intentional, we tend to go, okay, that's my challenge for this season in my life. And I'm good with that challenge. And maybe you are, but maybe the challenge is so big that it's enough. But I would encourage or invite the listeners to think about when you're in a challenging environment, when there's adversity, what would it be like to ramp that up? Volitionally. I know this sounds like, what are you talking about? Like, what, you want me to go flog myself in the bathroom? Like, what?
Whoa, dude.
Like, what?
Whoa.
What are we supposed to be
doing?
It's
Monday morning, bro.
it sounds a little bit like sadistic, right? That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about...
You've been sitting in the darkness too much.
This is what happens. I'm talking about calculatedly, in a measured way, increasing the challenge in an already challenging environment so that you can prove to your brain, your heart, and your spirit that you're more powerful than your environment.
Yes.
That's really what we're after here. And so when it's painful, amp the pain.
Yeah.
When it's uncomfortable, make it more uncomfortable. When it's expensive, invest more, right? So we have to look at the adversity square in the face and almost go, you think that's adversity? Let me show you what adversity is.
Yeah.
Now I get to define what adversity is, right? And so for me, it was physical challenge. It doesn't have to be. It could be emotional. It could be mental. It could be education. It could be relational challenge that you amp, that you really turn up the dial on. For me, it just happened to be physical, and that's worked really well for me. Also reduces stress and all the other benefits that come with it. But
so good.
But no matter what, this is one that you're probably not going to read in a self-help book.
Yeah.
But I think it's really important. And if you haven't done this, try it. See what happens. You'll be shocked and amazed what your brain, body, heart, soul, spirit, mind can handle when you amp it up a little bit. And then whatever it is that's the challenging thing in your life, the volume actually decreases. The noise decreases when you volitionally turn it up. It's really interesting.
Yeah. And I think of, for you, it was, during COVID times, it was having a specific set of miles that you were going to run in that year.
Yeah.
Right. And then breaking that down and just tackling that on a day by day, week by week basis.
Yep.
But there's so many other good things out there, right? Like I've just seen over the years, either for myself or for people that I've worked with, things like training for a half marathon, training for a marathon, training for an Ironman, training for a Tough Mudder, doing a Spartan race, 30-day yoga challenge, maybe taking on hot yoga for the first time. 75 Hard has been pretty popular for the last several years. Like there are so many different programs out there that you can do to go challenge yourself. Like those are just a few ideas, but pick something which, by the way, regardless of whether there's a crisis going on around you or not, those are things that are going to bring out the best in you.
Yeah.
No matter what. And Kia and I have noticed that for years in working with literally hundreds of salespeople that are full commission salespeople. For a lot of years, it was working with people doing all cold calling, no leads. It was really hard. Mm-hmm. You notice that people were typically at their best when they were also training for something in the background.
Yeah.
When they were volitionally increasing the challenge, as we're talking about here.
And part of that is that concept of a success is contagious within you. Mm-hmm. And so usually what happens with human beings is that when they're experiencing success in one area, when they're devoted really well to that one area, let's take, for example, fitness. So if you're super devoted in fitness, that bleeds over into other areas of your life usually.
Yeah.
There's just kind of like a chain reaction events there that says, hey, if you're crushing it over there, if you're really showing up in your best self and challenging yourself and making advancements, more than likely that's going to seep into business or spirituality or relationships or sleep habits or eating habits or, whatever the case may be.
Yep.
And so remember, success is contagious and it kind of, success will share itself within you.
Yeah. Speaking of chain reactions, you hear about this bombshell NAR lawsuit?
It's unprecedented.
It is unprecedented. That's exactly what I was going to say. All right.
So good.
Number three, don't travel alone. Here, good segue, because we're talking about physical challenge.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've always appreciated about, you might love it or hate it, you're going to laugh at this. One of the things I've always appreciated about the CrossFit community is you're suffering with a community of other people that are all suffering with you.
Yes.
And there's something, unbelievably good about that,
yeah.
You know, comforting.
It builds community.
Invigorating. Yeah. And it's also, it's sort of when you're in community, you're in, you have some built-in accountability.
Yeah.
With those people, right? Yeah. Like they see you, they know what you're capable of. They can call you out when you're not giving your best. They can high five you when they see you,
totally,
you know, crushing it and giving it your all. And it's funny because we've often referred to Thrive as the CrossFit
of real estate
brokerages.
Yeah.
Where a lot of brokerages are like having a gym membership at 24-hour fitness, and maybe you show up, maybe you don't, but
no one cares.
Right. No one cares. In fact, they don't want you to show up because then, you know, there's more likely they're going to get the machine they want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
So I think about, you know, the community at Thrive, mm-hmm. and what a blessing it is, and how much gratitude I think we should all have that we get to have the caliber of people around us that we do.
Yeah.
And dozens of them.
Yeah.
Right. But again, if we're talking about crisis in a more global sense, you need to find community around whatever that crisis is. So like you mentioned getting your spouse involved.
Yeah.
Which I think is huge. So I think coworker is the place we automatically go to because we're talking about NAR, which affects our vocation. And right. So we think about the people we work with, but it's bigger than just that.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's, I mean, whoever it is, it could be your spouse. It could be your significant other, boyfriend, girlfriend. It could be your mom, your dad, brother, sister, uncle, aunt, friend, teammate, whoever.
I think about how many people we work with that have, you know, really small, compact mastermind groups.
Yep.
Outside of real estate. In fact, a lot of times, like there's a few people, you know, shout out to KP, like he was one that came to mind right away.
Yeah.
His mastermind has nothing to do with real estate.
No.
Right. But it was something he was doing before he ever got to Thrive. And one of the reasons we wanted him at Thrive, because you're like, oh, that's the kind of guy I want to build something with.
Yeah. He's already doing the activity.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this concept too is the old saying is if you want to go fast, go alone.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like the shooting star. But if you want to go far, go together. And it's more complicated because anytime you have more than one human, things get complicated, right? So there's the Bible reference right there. And so we have to name that and go, okay, so it is more complicated. It's vulnerable to show up and say, hey, here's what I'm dealing with. Here's what's weighing heavy on me. I'm scared of this. I'm fearful of this. I'm concerned about this. I'm worried about that. But I want you to know about it so that I'm not necessarily alone in the fight. I still have to fight the fight. And the person that you share it with probably can't do it for you, right? My spouse can't, you know, help on a day-to-day practical basis on this whole NAR lawsuit and where Thrive's going to go and how we're going to navigate it and the tactics. And that's really for you, me, and the operations team to figure out. But having her have a line of sight and at least know what I'm carrying and know the battle that I'm fighting and for me to be seen in the fight is a totally different context than not being seen or noticed at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And one last thing to add to this as well is as you look at, you know, not traveling alone, as you seek community, just be very cognizant of who you're inviting into that space. Mm. Because
yeah, well said.
If it's a group of people that don't handle crisis well, that's what you're inviting. You're going to become more like that.
Yeah.
Right. And so make sure that, you know, whether it's in a vocational sense or a life sense or whatever, that whoever you are inviting into that space, they're people who handle crisis well. They're people who have optimism. They're people who have encountered and overcome adversity successfully.
Yeah.
In the past, like that's who you need in your corner. You're going to have people in your life that you need to include in this that mm-hmm. may not be all of those things.
Yeah.
And that's okay. You still need to find a cohort.
Yeah.
You know, you need to find an inner circle that is going to help you navigate this well. People, I go back to that phrase, you know, you want people who are going to bring out the best in you.
Yeah.
Not people who are going to feed the miserable, fearful,
right,
chaotic side of you.
You get in that cul-de-sac conversation of like, this is awful. This sucks. What are we going to do? And it doesn't go anywhere.
Yep.
And to simplify this, and then we'll move on. This could be one person, could be 3, 4, 5, could be your small group, could be your mastermind, whatever it is. It doesn't need to be 20. It just needs to be one to three or four that you can consult with, talk with, share with, and just carry the load with is really what we're talking about here. Number four, expand knowledge. Quite simply, for this one, I studied, you know, and I study. That's kind of what I've noticed about myself is when this kind of stuff happens, this kind of stuff being flavor of the day is the NAR lawsuit, I want to gain as much knowledge as possible. I want to observe what's happening in my own mind and write that down. I want to capture what you say and write that down. I want a whiteboard. I want to listen to my peers. I want to listen to my competition. I want to get on webinars. I want to read news articles, even if they're full of clickbait BS. I want to know. I want to know what are clients reading, even if it's total headline frenzy type of stuff. So I become a sponge. And I think it's really important that we do that because we need to have peripheral vision. And sometimes we lack that. Sometimes we get the tunnel vision. And so there's a huge difference between just knowing things and then later also being able to actually explain them. And I think good agents know things. And I think really awesome agents can explain things. But to explain things, you have to have peripheral vision. You have to have deep knowledge and deep understanding of what it is that we're actually dealing with. And so I know some people are going, oh, you know, I don't want to study this. I just want to get on with, you know, the path and let's just go. And it's not going to be that big of a deal. Or maybe you're thinking this is going to be a massive deal and it's going to change forever. Wherever you are on that spectrum, I think we would all agree studying, the good news is it's not a bad thing. There's never going to be a situation where studying and understanding what you think, what other people think, what your clients think, what the perception is, what the news is saying, all of it. Not so that we can drag ourselves down a hole of just constantly gaining more knowledge. There is a limit to this, but having a really good understanding of what it is and what it isn't is super important. The real idea here is that it results in freedom. It is really where it goes ultimately, is being free to understand the silly headlines that we read, being free to understand the client experience and what they're thinking about and what they're worried about and what their angst is around all this. If you're a team leader, obviously, or a leader of any kind, expanding your knowledge so that you can provide clarity to your team and the people that you get to lead
right.
about what it is and what it is not. And yeah. So these are really important pieces of the puzzle. And how do you do that? Tons of ways. You can brainstorm with other folks that are on the same track as you. You could brainstorm with us.
Yeah.
Reach out to us. You could read, you could journal, you could whiteboard, you could mastermind, all kinds of different ways to really dig in, dive in. This is just a very practical thing. I created just a shared Google Doc. I got it right here actually. And it's called NAR Lawsuit Notes and Musings. And I've got content from Ben Kinney. I've got content from D360 Consulting. I have other notes that I need to add in here from John Sheplak, right? So I'm just diving in. I want to know what everyone's saying, what they're thinking, and how they're carrying it. And again, probably the best way to gain knowledge of this is you can download the settlement. It's 104 pages. And I'll be the first to say, like, I almost fell asleep in the first two. Pro tip, start on page 27, section H. Section 27, boom. Section H. But if you hadn't read the proposed settlement, we have to ask, like, do you really know what you're talking about?
Right.
You should probably read it so that you can make your own conclusions and draw your own outcomes from the actual document. So Google it, download it, and read it.
Yeah. By the way, quick side note, because I heard somebody say this last week on a podcast. Keep in mind, if you're an agent or a broker listening to this, which I'm assuming most people are,
sure.
You are way more worried about this and spending way more time thinking about this than the average consumer.
Totally.
The average consumer doesn't know what shows up in the MLS and what doesn't.
Right.
Right. They don't know the real estate contract.
Right.
Right. Like, in fact, they're just like, it's more of a talk of, hey, did you hear about that thing? How's that going to affect you guys? You know, like,
right, right.
They don't actually know. So, you know, keep things in the proper perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And one thing, last thing with expanding knowledge, and then we'll jump to number five and start to wrap. As you're expanding your knowledge, remember that it's not what we know, but it's what we use of what we know that actually makes the difference, right? Mm-hmm. So don't just study for the sake of studying, although that's better than not studying.
Yeah.
But like, study stuff and then figure out how you can actually put it into,
yep.
into action. And then the other thing that I wrote down as you were going through this is how important it is to recommit to the fundamentals.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
yep.
rather than being the master of all the intricacies of what the proposed settlement is, although you do need to know that stuff, it's way more valuable to become a master of the intricacies of crafting a value proposition to a consumer that's compelling as to why they should work with you.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Like, that's worth studying.
That's 100% worth studying. It's like taking the information and going, okay, so if that's the information, now I have a clear sense of what it is we're actually talking about here. Mm-hmm. And then, so what?
Right.
do you just, okay, great. So you know that. So the next time they have NAR lawsuit settlement trivia at the bar, you'll win.
Right.
What are we doing?
Right. Right. Yeah.
So to your point, you have to go and actually execute and do something, change yes. your script, change your materials, create or update your buyer presentation.
Totally.
Role play new ways of talking about what your value proposition, whatever it is.
And I would go back, like when I talk fundamentals, I'm talking like oldies but goodies. You know, I think about books that like How I Raised Myself from Failure to Success in Selling.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah.
I would go to Brian Tracy's, you know, Become a Sales Superstar.
Yep.
I would go to Zig Ziglar's Secrets of Closing the Sale. I would go to anything Jeffrey Gittimer has written.
Totally.
It's so good. And I like his style because he's so snarky. And
yeah.
That's my kind of guy.
In your face.
But like that kind of stuff, like go back to those things
yeah.
because sales is sales is sales. Like no matter what's going on in the world, sales is still going to be sales and people are still going to be people.
Yeah. 100%. Right?
That actually ties in really well with the last one.
Yeah.
You know, when you're part of studying is you're feeding your psyche and you're equipping yourself, which I think gives you a lot of confidence and it also creates discipline.
Yes.
And as we know, discipline creates freedom. What are some other things that you wrote down under feeding the psyche? What's worked for you in the past?
Yeah. I think the nuance here that maybe gets missed is that reading, of course, I think hopefully everybody on the podcast would agree that reading is really important. That's been proven a million times over. So, but reading what? And usually we read and we just kind of, yeah, I've got this, you know, list of books that we should read and that have been recommended to us. Maybe they're on leadership, maybe they're on sales, you know, maybe they're on entrepreneurship, whatever it is. And it's kind of a stack of books. But I think in a crisis, emergency, adversity, navigating adversity, we should read intentionally, I think is the nuance. That's my suggestion, is to read intentionally. And so when you look at your book list and go, well, there's 10 books that are on my list. Well, is there one maybe that really relates really well to the current situation? One or two. And maybe there isn't. Maybe you look at it and go, no, they're all kind of off topic from what I'm currently, you know, going through. And so I'll give you guys two examples of intentional reading. So back in COVID, if I can just reference back to that, I started reading Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink. Why did I do that? Why was that an intentional read? It was intentional because in chaos, in absolute unknowns, just had no control over anything. I don't think any of us did. It was like being handed to us day by day by governors, mayors, the president, CDC, like all these different organizations, just like, here, this is what you're doing now. This is what you can't do. This is what you can do. It just didn't feel like we had any control at all. And so what I wanted to do in that environment was to understand, well, how can I own the way that I show up, my actions, my thoughts, my relationships, my business? How can I just have extreme ownership over all of it in this context of being so out of control? And so that's why I chose Extreme Ownership. And it was unbelievably challenging because if you've read that book, you know the concept is you have to be responsible for everything in your life, even if it's not your responsibility, right? So if you're a leader at a company and you look at someone who's underperforming, the question is, okay, great. What in that, it's not solely my responsibility, but what in that underperforming individual am I and should I be responsible for? And answering that question and just look at all of your life, your relationships, your marriage, your parenthood, your friendships, your business, your finances, everything. And it's this idea of like, you have to have a high degree of responsibility in all of it, even when it's uncomfortable or not convenient. And so that was a really intentional read. If you're wondering, well, what's your intentional read now? My intentional read now is a book called Resilience. And I just started it like this morning, basically after I did the Peloton ride. And Resilience is an intentional read because the title suggests, it's like, well, in this ever-changing environment that we find ourselves in between now and July, when things actually get settled out and we see, you know, the new contracts, the new process, the new way of doing business, I want to be resilient for myself, for my family, for my team, and for my teammates. I want them to look at me at the end, 5 months from now, and go, he didn't make all the perfect decisions, but he was resilient through all of it. And so why not read a book on resilience? Because that's my preferred picture of the future, is that. So that's what I mean by read intentionally, is pick something that helps to equip and empower and navigate when you're in the particular adversity that you're in.
So I love that you shared a couple specific titles that people can pick up, right? Yeah. But like, bottom line is, you know, pick something up, because I wrote this down while we were talking. If you're not feeding your subconscious intentionally, somebody else is going to feed it for you.
100%.
Like, there's so much noise out there.
Yeah.
And so you really got to take control of that. And those are two great titles. I haven't read Resilience yet. I know you sent me a screenshot of that in a text, but I haven't started that one yet. A couple other things. We talked about this ahead of time. As we close up shop here, I think the main takeaway is, yes, you've gotten some really practical application steps, but I think the most important one is, after you listen to this, sit down with a journal or a piece of paper and create a plan.
Yes.
Feel free to borrow this one.
Yeah.
Feel free to have 5 steps. Feel free to have 3. Keep it short, because less is more.
Less is definitely more powerful.
With stuff like this, otherwise it's just this overwhelming laundry list. But you need to have a plan, and a plan that you can apply not just now, but anytime.
Anytime.
Adversity pops up.
Yeah. And no matter what the context is, we said it earlier, but just to reiterate, you know, we're using the NAR lawsuit as kind of a
catalyst.
Yeah, a catalyst and a clear and present example of what we're talking about. But really what our hope is for, I think, our listeners is that you do, that you craft a plan, 2, 3, 4, 5 steps, something like that, that is your familiar roadmap in the unfamiliar. And the unfamiliar is usually in crisis, because that's when things become difficult. That's when things become upheaved. They don't look the same way that they did yesterday, and tomorrow is unknown. And so in that environment where it seems like everything is shifting, nothing is predictable, nothing is known, so it can feel, having the familiar roadmap to go back to and say, this is how I do it. This is how I do it. And it's not easy. It's not simple. It's not pretty. It's not perfect. Mm-hmm. get off track with some of these sometimes, but having it and going, okay, like this is a reminder of what I do when I'm in a kind of a crisis moment is huge. And if you do that, then I think this episode is a success.
Yeah. Yeah. It's ironic, regardless of what's going on in life. If all you did each day was consistently carve out time to take care of your physical health, your mental health, you know, feed your mind intentionally, engage in community, do hard things.
Yep.
Like, no matter what's going on in life or work, you're probably going to be in a pretty good spot no matter what.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's just a recipe for success and for winning the day.
100%.
The other two things I wrote down is, write this down if you're in a place where you can write this down. Just a reminder, it's never as bad as it seems. Mm-hmm. Just like it's also never as good as it seems.
Right? It's usually somewhere in the middle.
Yep. Yep. And then the third thing is, build your arc. So if there was one thing, like, if you are in the real estate field and this NAR, remember, it is a proposed settlement.
Yep.
Nothing's actually been settled.
Not yet.
Yet, right? So there's time. When I say build your ark, it's that old idea of, like, Noah didn't wait till it started raining to build the ark.
Right.
He was already working on it well in advance. Mm. Well, you've had time and you still have time, where I would make the next 3 or 4 months the 3 or 4 months that you work the hardest in 2024.
Yeah.
Right? Because the more stuff you put in your pipeline, the more buyers and sellers you engage, the more relationships you create, the harder you work, the better off you're going to be, no matter what ends up shaking out with the actual settlement. Yeah, right.
Totally.
And I think back, I've said this to you a couple times, you know, when there was definitely a shift where during COVID times, once the dust settled, most people ended up having the best 2 years ever of their real estate career.
Mm-hmm.
It was bonkers.
Yeah.
You know, like, everybody said, you know, if you could put a sign in the yard, you're going to do real estate deals.
Yeah.
You don't even have to be that good.
Right.
And you saw a lot of people kind of let that success go to their head and take their foot off the gas.
Yeah.
And then it's funny, because not long after that, then rates jump through the roof, and
yep.
You know, now all of a sudden people are sitting on the sidelines, and, you know, this and that and the other thing. And it's funny, because at some point rates are going to drop. Yep. You know, the market is going to soften. Then there's going to be a new set of challenges. But we've talked about the people I would bet on are the people who are continuing to like really put the pedal all the way down to the floor on relationship building, client acquisition, like preparing for the future. Because I think there's a lot of people who maybe got distracted with like, look how good I am. Look how many deals I'm doing. I'm going to start focusing on, you know, the luxury market, or I'm going to focus right. on more advisor generated stuff where I have a bigger split and I'm going to focus on my economics.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think
from the basics,
those are the people who suffered the most when rates went up.
Yeah.
The people who just were humble enough to commit to the fundamentals or go back to the fundamentals of, yeah, times are hard. And so I need to go figure out new and different ways to get clients than what I've been doing the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Those people still did really well and had great years.
Yeah.
And so I would encourage you right now, like, what are the things you can be doing right now that a year or two down the road, you're going to look back and go, oh my gosh, thank God I fill in the blank. Thank God I worked so many weekends. Thank God I started doing open houses. Thank God I did a great job of putting on client events, right? Before the proposed settlement happened. Thank God I took as many leads as I did and, you know, ramped up my work hours during those 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that there's an opportunity here that would be easy to miss. And I don't want that to get missed in all of these things where, you know, we look at these five things and certainly these things are all actionable, but don't get stuck on all this personal improvement stuff and forget to do the actual work.
Yeah. If it just ends up being philosophical, then that wasn't the point. Yeah. It needs to result in some type of action that goes out the door, out your front door, out your office door, and changes what it is that you actually do on a day-to-day basis when you wake up in the morning, when you go to bed at night, and in between.
Yeah.
Like if it doesn't take root, if this roadmap of five things or whatever your roadmap is doesn't actually affect your business and your life, then it's probably the wrong roadmap.
Yeah, 100%.
So,
100%. There are still people that need to be helped. There's impact to be made.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, go equip yourself, but like do the work on top of these five things or whatever is in your roadmap.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Awesome. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Absolutely. Cheers.
Cheers.